Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good.
Okay. Welcome to If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes, Life Coaching with Deidre. I'm Deidre, your host, coming to you live on Inner Light Radio, broadcasting straight out of Richmond, California. Now, I know you could have listened to any of the thousands of podcasts on the radio, internet, or even satellite. So let me start off first for thanking you for picking mine. I am an organic therapist, personal mental trainer, self-esteem booster, good-hearted devil's advocate, relationship guru, archaeologist of the soul, and a boss, all rolled up into one, here to give you my perspective on life by guiding, deepening, and challenging your thoughts while influencing you with innovative, insightful information, not forgetting to motivate, provoke, and influence your actions while empowering, educating, and entertaining you. My show will be talking about life, dreams, relationships, love, happiness, health, wealth, fitness, careers, family, and everything else that goes along with all of that. This month, I'm continuing my women's health and wellness series. We have been talking about this for months now. Your new self-care habits should now include spa treatments, vagina health, cannabis healing, sound therapy, exercise and stretching, mental and emotional wellness, hair therapy, being part of a good, healthy community, getting your finances together, healing your inner child, and today I want to talk about sexual healing. The history of sexual healing is rich and varied. Ancient civilizations viewed sexual practices differently than contemporary society. Cultures such as Africans, Greeks, and Romans celebrated sensuality as a vital aspect of life. For them, sexual wellness was closely tied to emotional connection and physical health. Many traditional cultures incorporated sexuality into their healing rituals, specifically focusing on energy and intimacy, presenting sexuality as a path to enlightenment and healing. Now, in contrast, Victorian era, y'all know we probably talk about white people, their attitudes towards sex were characterized by repression. The Victorian era is viewed as a serious time of strict social conventions, oppressive imperialism, and rigid moral codes. This repression led to various movements aimed at rediscovering the importance of sexuality. Over time, these movements contributed to the sexual liberation of the 20th century, which shifted the perception of sexual healing towards a more open and accepting view. Sexual healing goes beyond physical health. It's about feeling empowered and confident in your body. It's a huge part of our overall health and happiness, but it often gets brushed under the rug. For a lot of us, talking about sexual health can feel awkward or even embarrassing, which might keep us from seeking the care or the information or the support we need. But when you feel empowered to understand and prioritize your sexual well-being, it can lead to better relationships, a more connected sense of self, and a richer life. At the end of the day, it's about understanding that your sexuality is a core part of who you are, and it deserves to be nurtured, explored, and celebrated. Look, we're all unique sexual beings, and our sex drives are often dictated by personal events, relationships, and beliefs. Therefore, sexual healing is not a one-size-fit-all approach and can look very different from one person to another. But at its core, the concept centers around reconnecting with your sensuality. Sexual healing is the necessary rewriting of our nervous system back to our natural state of pleasure and ecstasy, especially after a traumatic experience or chronic levels of stress. It comes from an inside-out approach, which focuses on first addressing trauma held in the body with understanding and healing practices, and then allowing the mind to follow. Today's guest, Nika Sherrill, is owner of the House of Sherrill, co-founder of the International Institute of Sexual Empowerment, and a pleasure and intimacy coach specializing in advocacy and sexuality. With her coaching, you'll understand that pleasure and connection grow when we learn how to communicate openly. Her workshops and support groups are designed to guide you through that process in a safe, supportive, and playful environment. Together, you will explore how to move past shame and stigma and discover new ways to express your desires with confidence. So whether you're looking to strengthen an existing relationship, open up new possibilities with a partner, or simply get more comfortable talking about sex, working with an intimacy coach like Nika is exactly what you need. You'll leave with practical tools, greater self-awareness, and the courage to speak up so you and your partner or partners can enjoy the sex and intimacy you truly want. Hey, Queen, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I appreciate all of that info.
I love it. Thought you was coming in on something just real smooth. And then I had to, you know, get you with the big bang. So I'm glad that you enjoyed all that. Tell us, girl, please share with us your journey of becoming a pleasure and intimacy coach. How did that happen, Queen?
Absolutely. Yes. So I began coaching in 2016. I loved doing it. I was a transformational coach, life coach, a number of things. And to double back just a bit, I actually started designing and manufacturing sex toys in 2011. So as I began to work in this new area, people would come to me all the time and they're like, hey, I have this thing I need to talk to somebody about. What's going on here? Can you listen to me? And I began to just be this free and open, shame-free space for people to just get their answers, their questions, their needs met. And I later discovered people aren't doing this a lot in the area of pleasure and intimacy, especially not people of color. So how do I actually create a space that's going to make this well-rounded and healing for everyone? Part of the work that I do in the early days focused on increasing diversity in conversations on health and sexuality, because I feel like, as we know, as you just explained in your intro, we all didn't come to sexuality the same way. And one of the things that I love to say is we weren't all there at the Summer of Love. We all are on different journeys. We all have different work to do. So being able to create this space for people and allow those healing conversations to come in has been one of my deep, deep passions. So in 2020, I merged the sexual wellness and intimacy work with my personal coaching practice and began to support individuals and couples in this area in a really deeply needed way. So it's been very rewarding, very fulfilling, and I love the fact that I'm able to contribute to people's lives in this way.
I love that you are doing that. Now, I know that we're going to talk a little bit more about your workshops, but I know when I met you, you were selling some of your trigger happy toys. Can you explain to us? You are the designer and owner of that, Queen. Tell us what that is and how did you become, how did that come into fruition?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So Trigger Happy Toys is a collection of erotic adult novelties that is actually based on an art series I created in my earlier days. So I've got a background in fine art, and I created this series that was fun and playful and semi-political. It was all around power, identity, and expression. And so what I did with this series is I combined dildos and handguns. And I did this because I looked at both of those as a way to compensate for power and how that conversation can be really, really in depth for a lot of people. Like, how are we compensating? How are we overcompensating? And as I went through that series, people started tapping me like, hey, you know, if you make that functional, I'll use it. And I was like, you know what? Let's go.
Thanks for planting that seed.
Hello. Okay. So I designed a series of products, and the flagship toy is called the Nikita. It's a medical grade, handmade silicone dildo. It's got the grip for the, that represents the gun element. It also has the dildo side of it. And the beautiful thing about it is it's fun, it's playful, it gets people in an adventure space, but it's also a powerful accessibility tool. It comes up all the time, like, why didn't people put a handle on a dildo a long time ago? Because if you use these types of toys, you know it can get slippery and challenging and the angles can get awkward. And so to be able to have something that allows you to have accessibility with this toy was very powerful. So I tell people you can use it on a partner. You can use it on yourself, and it reduces a severe amount of wrist tension. It can also be used as a harness-free strap-on, and it is great. It's got a space for a bullet vibrator. You can see more of that in the rest of the series on the website, which I'm sure I'll talk about more later. But it was
Girl, you can give it to us more than one time because I'm sure people don't want to write it down.
You're absolutely right. So the website is triggerhappytoy.com. Real easy to remember, triggerhappytoy.com. And so you'll be able to see more of the products and the work that I do there. But just to be able to take it from something that was fun and playful and really engages people in conversation to this accessibility device, this tool that people need. I have dexterity challenges from time to time, and so having access to products like these makes a world of difference.
Well, not only is the toy unique, but then you went in and put so many creative spins on it because there's so many different kinds that that you can buy. I'm going to plant a seed and see if you can make it so like a gun handle, you can change that, like, put a silencer on, you just unscrew it and put on another dildo that, you know, does something different because yours have so many different functions. Some of them light up, some of them change colors, some of them do all kinds of stuff. Isn't that correct?
That is true. We've got some that glow, we've got some that change color. We're actually working right now to take the company to the next level and release four new other designs, which I'm very excited about. So definitely stay tuned for that. We're doing an investor run so that we can take it to a national level. And so I'm definitely going to put a pin in that and keep it going. I've got some that are larger, some that are smaller. And we're going to keep having fun with it.
I love it. I hope that whatever it is that you do, it is highly successful and always selling out, and you just go like, I just can't keep up with it. So we're going to put that on you for all of that, Queen. So good luck.
Yes.
So
yes,
now,
thank you.
With all that being said, though, you have established several support groups and workshops. Can you describe all that you do, you know, and because I know you have several workshops. It's not just one.
Yes. So that's looking at the International Institute for Sexual Empowerment, which is a nonprofit that I co-founded back in 2023. We actually started with the pandemic offering a number of online summits that were designed to have people come together and have these conversations around sexuality and healing and getting to share our stories and talk to other people who may have similar walks of life or walks of life that we don't even know about. So inside of the nonprofit, we now offer programs every day of the week, and we call those our empowerment groups. So on Mondays, we've got one called Rocking the Ages, which is for women perimenopause and beyond. And it's, someone described it as grown-ass women talking about sex. So it's a really, really amazing space for people to get together and have those conversations. Also, on Monday evenings, I lead a group called We Rise, which is for survivors of sexual trauma. And that can be a very in-depth, very deep conversation as we all deal with trauma and healing differently. But the idea is that these groups are designed for us to come together and be empowered. So we share our learning, we share our growth, we reflect on things that we've come through, and really talk about putting in things that allow us to break free from certain aspects of life, certain patterns, certain elements, certain people, and really, really have that space. On Tuesday, we have our Embrace Yourself, which is a group around creating a healthy dynamic with yourself and really having that self-love. We have on Wednesday the Radical Self-Love Lab, which is all around changing your narrative, knowing you don't have to change yourself. So those are uniquely different, led by different facilitators and very powerful. We also have a social justice advocacy group that we have on Wednesday mornings. And I tell people the Institute is a social justice organization that operates in the area of sex and health and sexuality. So it's more than just talking about sex as an action, but sexual empowerment as it relates to every aspect of your life, your love life, relationships, family, kids, how you show up at work. Like, all of these different things are impacted by our relationship with ourselves. So that's something that I really lean into as being pretty major. And the social justice advocacy group gives us a space to really lean into that. On Thursdays, we have a movie night, which we get together, watch films from popular culture, and then have a culturally expansive lens around how we discuss them. And those conversations change lives, and you'd be surprised at what comes up. The last one I'll share about is our group on Fridays, which is called The Edge. And it is our kink-informed, kink-positive space for people who are questioning, interested, have been in the lifestyle for a long time, and want to come and also have that kind of community and camaraderie that comes with the joy and play and pleasure of sex. So those are our weekly offerings. We also have book clubs. We've got a community happy hour. That's lots of fun. And then we also offer the workshops. So you just mentioned as well. In addition to the empowerment groups, we do workshops a few times a quarter, and we bring in speakers from all over the world. Our platform is online, so it's all virtual. You can access it from anywhere. We do this for both reach and accessibility because not everybody can make it out to a location. Sometimes it's a lot harder to do that. So we wanted to have this be accessible for everyone. So our speakers come in from all over the place and provide empowering conversations. I'll share, I just led a workshop called Pleasure at Your Fingertips, The Power of Pleasure Autonomy. And that workshop focused on masturbation. May was Masturbation Month, and we came together and talked about moving past shame around masturbation and orgasm. We talked about how to not make your pleasure someone else's problem, which is a big thing. And then we went over some tips and tricks and tools that would help you increase that relationship with yourself. So we did record that, which is why I'm talking it all the way out. You'll be able to find the recording on the website for the nonprofit. And it was a very fulfilling, rewarding workshop. I think people got a lot out of it. This coming in the next few weeks on June 20th, We are having our social justice advocacy showcase, and that is in honor of Juneteenth. The theme is Where Art Creates Action, and it's going to be a showcase that it features visual art, performance art, a number of things that allow people to express and say what they need to say, given these current political times, and really push that conversation. So those are a couple of the things we have coming up. Our next quarter is on influencing sexuality, and in Q4, we're going to talk about creating sexuality. There's a whole catalog on the website, IIFEglobal.org. Definitely going to have more to tell you about with that. But also, if you are interested in joining any of our programming and coming to check us out, we also offer a 2-week free trial where you have the opportunity to come visit our groups. Feel free to drop in a couple of times and just get a feel for how it can support you and what you're up to in the world. They are a vast variety of topics, as I just went over. So some will resonate with you. Some will, you know, resonate with people you know. Please, please share the word and tell everyone. And I just love being able to offer those.
Can you, girl, my phone is blowing up. You know, I work with a lot of groups and parenting groups. I told them that you was coming on. They do have a couple of questions real quick about what you were just talking about. Can you share some of your locations, especially some of the Bay Area ones? And what kind of movies do you show on your movie nights? And the biggest one is May is Masturbation Month. What does that mean? So where are your locations, please?
Okay, so it's all online, it's virtual, and you can log in. If you sign up for the 2-week trial, you'll get all the links so that you can show up and be present. It's, so we are located pretty much anywhere.
Gotcha.
And we are looking to set up satellite locations for people who want to get together in person. So if anyone does have an idea, a suggestion, a group that they want led or facilitated, please let us know. We're more than happy to begin setting those up as our community grows. And I love that.
What kind of movies?
Other questions.
Mm-hmm. What kind of movies do you watch on movie night?
So we do go by monthly and quarterly themes. So we just wrapped up May, which was Masturbation Month, Mental Health Awareness Month, a number of things like that. This coming month, we are celebrating Pride, Men's Mental Health, Juneteenth. So we've got films that follow that theme. We're going to be watching The Pursuit of Happiness, which is wonderful. It's coming up. Call Me by Your Name, Miss Juneteenth. In July, it is Disability Awareness Month. And so we're doing a 2-part episode series called Dying for Sex. And we'll be talking about what happens in the area of when disability and sexuality cross paths, because we're not all able-bodied. We're not all porn stars, things like that. And so how do we get access to these things that our bodies need in a multitude of ways? We have films from multiple backgrounds and diverse cultures. We want to represent and show everyone. So we just played Quinceañera, and coming up in, I want to say September, we're doing Lipstick Under My Burqa, which is a Bollywood film I'm really excited to see. And it talks about feminism and empowerment in India. So there is a list, a schedule of the movies coming out, and we'll have those available as well. But a vast array, looking at so many different walks of life. And again, being able to break down those conversations of how did this impact me growing up, watching it now, what did I learn? So many things.
So what, for May being Masturbation Month, and we may have missed it, how can we still celebrate that month?
Oh, masturbate, masturbate, masturbate. And tell all your friends.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. So the recording of that workshop, we're going to be posting on the website. You can still go there and register. And as soon as it comes out, it will be sent to you. So that is something that's available. And I think that masturbation is one of the healthiest ways that we can connect with ourselves, our body, our self-learning and discovery. So definitely do that. Tell people you know. It comes around every year, and you can masturbate every day.
You said every day. I love it. Well, you know, I got some parent questions coming, and when I told them that you were coming, this question, of course, I don't think there was a parent group that I work in that did not ask me to make sure that I ask you when and how should parents talk about sex with their children, and what resources do you recommend for the parents that are struggling? And that came from not only, you know, I was surprised that that actually came from every culture and almost every age of there was a parent that was struggling as into what to say exactly or when to bring it up, or do you wait for the kid to bring it up? Do you say nothing? You know, there's so much. So set us straight on this part, Queen.
Absolutely. You know, and I love that question. Thank you so much for bringing that to the surface. So the first thing I say is early and often. The talk is not a one-time thing. It is an ongoing conversation that you get to build with your child as they begin to develop and understand themselves as a human. So just like you would talk to someone in their teen years, if you were fortunate enough to have a relationship with your kid as an adult, you're going to be having different conversations about sex. So the other thing I say is you want it to be age appropriate content. So when you're looking at someone who, you know, a child around 4 or 5, something like that, they're beginning to be socialized in school. They're getting to know other kids around them. They're developing a sense of self in the world. And so easy things like how to ask permission. You know, we use the word consent, and that's kind of a buzzword, but consent is permission. It's permission and request. That's it. So having them kind of understand what that means. Also knowing and stating their boundaries. So if a child knows, like, hey, this is where I end and you begin, and this is how comfortable I am with you being in my space, they start to have that autonomy. One of the things that I didn't learn until I was an adult was that it doesn't work to force your child to hug someone they don't want to hug. That takes away their autonomy. So it's like, no, go hug your grandpa, go kiss, you know, so-and-so. It's like they should be able to make those choices for where they're discovering affection, autonomy, and awareness. And if they feel close to you, they'll run up and give you a big old hug. And if they don't, then they'll create that distance. And these are things that you can do with children at a very young age. You don't even have to use the word sex. As a child gets older and develops more communication skills, there's safe words. And I think those are really important. It's like when I was a kid, someone would like pinch your arm, like say uncle. And it's like, that's too far. That doesn't need to be your safe word. They don't have to be torturing you. But if there's something that you're discovering, it's like, hey, I'm not comfortable with this. I need the action to stop. Give them something they can rely on to be able to say, hey, stop this action. And that needs to be respected by the people around them. So those are some early tips that I give for people, because they often think, I can't talk to them about this until they're in their teenage years. And honestly, by that point, it's probably actually too late. And it's okay. It should start somewhere. A couple of other things I do want to sprinkle into this question. This happened for me when I was around 13 or 14. My mom sat me down and she looked at me and said, you can ask me anything. That was the best sex talk I ever had. It freaked me out. I was a teenager. I was like, wait a minute. If I start asking questions, you're going to know that I know stuff. So I went and started doing all my own research. I was like, I want to know these things. I want to know that thing, so that at least when I do have questions to ask, I'll have a starting point, things that make sense. And it allowed for her to create a level of comfort with me where I didn't feel judged. I didn't feel freaked out or weird about it after I began to really understand that she was a safe space. So you want to create that relationship with your children too. We offer workshops for parenting. We just had one come up around the S word project, and it was around having conversations with youth about sexuality. My good friend Aaron Thompson leads that, and the discussion has been, you know, how do you talk to teenagers and youth about sex? And the thing that gets discovered is that as adults, we have our own hang-ups. So how do we get over our hang-ups to empower the youth in our lives? So I think that's a big one. I'll definitely make sure that you have that resource. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal work that she's doing, the S-Word Project. I'll make sure that you have the links to share with your audience.
I love that. Now, the biggest problem that parents are also having is that you and I are having this discussion as if kids now are still talking to their parents. But now with, you know, Google and Chat GPT, they really don't have to come to your parents anymore. And that's a problem, not only when it comes to sex, but it's just like, you know, it's stopping conversations. So that's why I'm encouraging parents, you'll have to go in and be first, because your kids won't come to you if they're curious like our kids did. You know what I mean? Or, you know, probably won't even have to know that you have to create a safe space, because they've Googled everything. They've seen it. They've watched a video. They've heard a podcast. You know what I'm saying? Or ChatGPT has literally just sat there and talked to them like a regular person and told them everything that they wanted to know. So that is getting so scary now that, you know, our kids are teaching themselves almost everything.
That is so fair. And one of the things that I'll say is that the quality of the answer is only as good as the quality of the question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to know when you're diving into Google, ChatGPT, the rest of these arenas, to actually know the scope and framework of what you're asking, which is why these resources are so subpar to being able to have an actual connected, authentic conversation. And it's more than just facts and positions. Like, it's way beyond that. So allowing them to have that space, you were going to have to start the conversation. This is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at any age, going back over time, it's always been like, I don't want to talk to my parents about that. Like, ooh. Mm-hmm. And you got to open the door. You got to roll out that red carpet.
And like you say, you have to, I tell parents, before you go in there, you know, know what words you're going to use. Be familiar with the jargon of the day, because you don't want your kids to say a word and now you've turned red in the face, you've gotten scared, you're just like, what? And your kid is just like, okay, wait a minute. And that will instantly let them know, okay, you ain't ready. And they'll probably won't come back to you anymore. You know what I mean? So you still have to get educated on what our children are listening to, what they're, you know, what's getting exposed to them. And that kind of, I'm hoping that makes our parents get back into connecting with their babies in the first place, so that we can kind of, you know, put a sensor on some of this stuff, because some of it you just don't need to necessarily know about at that age. And I'm going to give you an example real quick before we move on, is that I was just doing some research on a Black History class that I was going to be teaching about chattel women, slave moms, right? But when I put in, before I put in the word chattel, I just put in slave mom information, right? And all I got was nothing but S&M stuff that came up on the screen. And I'm thinking to myself, yep, if my kid would have just been putting that in for a history lesson or something, boom, a whole new world has opened up to my child's eyes, and they didn't even know what that meant. You know what I mean? They didn't even know that that's where they were going with this. So that kind of gets us back into just making sure that we have to not only make a safe space to talk about sex, but get in our kids' space just period now. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. 100%. A couple of other just tips to put in there is ask questions and be ready to listen.
Yes.
Shake off your own fears, doubts, and concerns. And the other thing that came out of the workshop we just did was sometimes it's easier to have this conversation in a car where they're not facing you, because mm-hmm. it actually gives them space to talk, to breathe, think, not feel pressured or like you're staring them down. And again, be that listening space. Know yourself, but listen.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to want to share more.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you brought that up in a car. I'm always telling my parents to have conversations in the car, because that usually is a safe space, because you can't take your hands off the wheel. You know what I mean? And you have to really pay attention to, you know, two things, basically the traffic and put in a listening ear. And if you're not in a car, then the reason the car works so well is because you're sitting side by side. A child doesn't have to see their, you know, like you were talking about, you don't have to see me in my face, and you don't have to maybe reading the expressions wrong. Or your face may not have the expression on it that your kid is inviting, you know, that's inviting to your baby for them to continue the conversation. So they'll shut it down. But when you're driving or sitting side by side, it always makes conversations easier. So that is definitely, I'm glad you brought that point up. Now, we're still talking about our babies, but some of them, and this was a huge conversation that we had in some of our groups where, you know, they were just wondering, like, our kids that are struggling with their own sexuality, do they struggle as early as elementary school, or is that a myth? You know, and I actually didn't know, but I do think that kids do struggle with their sexuality that early. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because exposure to sex and sexuality, we can't really dictate when that's going to happen for someone. So I know for myself, I was exposed to sex at a very young age. And I went through so much sexual shame between like the ages of 4 and 14, questioning my identity, who I liked, what was right, what was wrong, dealing with religion, so many things. It was deeply, deeply impactful. And I do wish that I had someone at that point in my life that I felt like I could talk to who would listen. I remember a teacher making a pass at me when I was in like the fourth grade. And so having youth be able to understand what these things mean is pretty major, because we don't know when it's going to start for them. And things like childhood sex play are a big thing. All of the rest of the things I just mentioned, whether it's exposure, whether it's abuse, you never know. So allowing them that space to begin to understand their sexuality and have conversations around what sexuality even means, pretty major.
Do you have any tools, words, resources, or help where when if a child does identify themselves as anything really nowadays other than heterosexual, because there's just so many different routes that they can go to, and hey, stand on them if that's what you believe. But we also have some families that just ain't gonna roll with that, you know, either because of their religions, their thought, their beliefs, or whatever it is. How do you help kids, you know, come out, so to speak?
Yeah. So as a parent, one of the things that you want to do is be as accepting and loving as possible, affirming for them that there's nothing wrong with them, no matter what society, community, or culture look like. Say the things that they're going to want to hear to have them feel safe. I remember when I told my mom that I was queer, she's like, okay, I love you. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't go to the following neighborhoods and have fun, be safe. And it was one of those things where I really had to sit with what she was saying, but it allowed me to feel comfortable in her presence. And I thought it was really beautiful, lovely, and accepting. One of the other things that I say for you to say to someone in that position is, we can't help who we're attracted to. Don't try to change yourself for anyone. As someone who's tried to fit into a heteronormative box, it's quite painful. I mean, emotionally damaging, it causes a lot of shame. That's one of the things that can lead to early suicide or suicide attempts, depression, things inside of youth that are pretty, pretty intense. And then on the religion note, I love this part of your question. And I think it's so critical I grew up in Missouri. My entire family is religious. And I still deal with all types of pushback, questions, comments, concerns, weirdness. For a child in that position, one of the things I would say is to create your own relationship with God and religion. I know some people will push back hard and they're like, I can't do it. It's evil. It's bad. It's wrong. I don't want to be around those people. But really having that space inside of yourself to know they've got their own version of God. They're creating whatever their relationship is. You get to create yours. And allowing that to be a space where you find peace and solace in knowing that the way that they're living their religious path doesn't have to be the way that you live yours, if you choose to be in that or not. And I wish that someone had given me that when I was younger, because I don't think I would have gone through as much religious trauma, which was another major thing of me dealing with my sexuality at such a young age. So it would have been very healing to know, hey, you're accepted, you can be accepted and loved, and know how to walk your own path without buying into other people's judgment.
You know what? That's really powerful. And I love the way that you framed that whole entire thing about just making sure that you have your own relationship with God and stand on that. You know what I mean? And you don't have to worry about anybody else and how their judgment may either try to affect you. If you already know that you, you know, especially when they try to use the, you know, start throwing Bible verses at you and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So I can imagine how if you have your own relationship, then that, you know, that's almost like the shield that you have, you know, and the armor that you wear to make sure that nobody else's words or thoughts or beliefs hurt you. So thank you for explaining it that way. I like that. Okay, I got parents talking about, can you stop talking about some kids and start getting into our questions, okay, because they know we are down to the last 15 minutes of the show. Okay, they blow my phone up like, girl, if you don't ask my question, you are going to have trouble with me next week. So can you tell me what can happen? What can a person do if only one person in a couple gets sexually satisfied?
Yes. So the thing I say is to do some digging into what's missing. What's missing for you, if you are that person, what's missing for your partner, if they are that person. We go through so many changes in our bodies, in our lives over time that things evolve. And if you're not getting that sexual satisfaction that you need, knowing what's missing to bridge that gap is critically important. It might be a type of touch. It might be what you hear, listen to. It could be your dynamic in the relationship. And I'll say this, and I might talk about it more because we got more to talk about, but I love BS dynamic. Like, I'm a dominant, and I didn't realize I was a dominant in relationships. So whenever I would date someone who was hyper masculine, I'd be like, ooh, I don't like them. Like, why are they bothering me? I'm not interested. Oh my God, I'm doing this because they like it, whatever. And then I learned, oh, I want to call the shots. And some people want me to call the shots. So figure out what's missing, get to know yourself and your identity, and that will deeply increase how you discover what kind of sexual satisfaction you actually want.
You brought up a really good point, and it does have a lot to do with also sometimes like you said, the connection that you have with your partner. If you guys are not sometimes emotionally connected, you know what I mean? Or if you don't even have a good vibe between you, then yeah, it's going to come off in your bed. Is that not true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I look at is, how are you turning your partner on? And I'm not talking about physical. I'm not talking about sexual. I'm talking about, are you supportive of them, their needs, their day-to-day life? I personally can't have sex with somebody that I'm upset with. And there are people who love angry sex. And there are people who, if you're not having a good relationship outside of the bedroom, they don't want to be with you inside of the bedroom.
Speak on that part.
How can you nurture that space? How can you nurture that relationship? Maybe they're tired of doing everything, so So you start taking on some of those responsibilities and they think, oh my God, you're taking care of me. That is sexy. And all of a sudden everything changes.
And you are 100% right, girl. We could talk about this forever. Because, you know, because it is the truth. And that's why date nights are so important, right? Because you're able to go outside of your home and reconnect again, have fun again, yeah. Do all those things that afterwards we don't want the night to end. Right? So you want to be together. Yeah. You want to be intimate, but all we're doing is just working and coming home with these bad kids. And then, you know, we feel like there's an imbalance that's helping with the housework or there's an imbalance with the finances or stuff. You're right. I'm going to bed with stress on my back. So the last thing I want you to do is tap my shoulder and act like I'm a rollover. Bro, I got stuff on my brain. You know what I mean? And
hello.
And some of it is about you. You know what I mean? So you should be glad you just laying in the same bed. But those type of things stop us because yeah. That takes us back to if we are having sex, sometimes it just feels obligated because I just want you to shut up. Right. I just want you to get it over with. And then we're still back to, I'm not getting satisfied, but you're not getting satisfied because you don't even want to be in this position right here. You know, not sexually, but just in this, position in your relationship.
Emotional.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. So.
Absolutely. And, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I want to expand people's concept of the word intimacy outside of the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
People will use that interchangeably with the term sex. And intimacy is so much bigger than that. Intimacy is connection. It's communication. It's how you nurture that relationship. So think about intimacy. Even think about foreplay as, do I make my partner their cup of coffee in the morning? Do I treat them well? Do I make them lunch? Do we text all day? Like, what is it that builds that intimacy and connection and communication that bring you two together? So it's way beyond the bedroom. And I just want to put that in so that people really have that expanded understanding.
Mm-hmm. Because it is what you're talking about. Those small little bitty things lead to, I want to see you. I want to be with you. I want to be next to you because, you know, you've been on my mind today. You've made small little efforts for me, for you to be on my mind, me on your mind. It's those little bitty things and this being able to talk about more than just bills. And these kids, we have to just remember there's so much more to us than being a parent. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, taking care of this household. And if we forget our partner doing that, then sometimes, again, that, like you say, that's going to flow into the bedroom. So there's definitely, this is a whole specific topic. And you know, it's a whole podcast on its own. So we will definitely be talking about this at another time. Queen, thank you for putting in your expertise on that. So tell us, is it possible to turn a boring partner into a kinky freak? And if so, how? And if not, what should they do? I love this question.
Love it. Right? So the first thing I'll say is that it's about compatibility. So what are you doing in the relationship to figure out how compatible you are with your partner? In the beginning, it could look like, oh my God, they like, you know, the new relationship energy is there and all I want to do is have sex all the time. And as you get older, as you grow in your relationship and life, your interests will go in different directions. So how can you find that compatibility between the two of you? I definitely think that, you know, this goes back to the last question where is your partner actually boring or are you not fulfilling their needs? And what would have them want to open up to you in that way? One of my clients, I was working with this couple and there was a lot of tension in the realm of their sexuality. They were not really getting along and there were a couple of things we discovered. First off, she felt ashamed about being a pillow princess. And he's like, oh, I love worshiping you. And that changed their dynamic. Also, we discovered that she's a brat, which is a whole kink dynamic that I can give you a resource. I'll tell you in just a second. But the fact that she's a brat gave him insight on how her like little pokes and digs were actually flirtations. And so having that deeper level of communication is huge. Now, the resource I'm going to give you is BDSM test. I want to say it's .org. Let me just double check that. But it's an extensive evaluation that I often give to my clients. Yes, BDSMtest.org, so that they can see where are they sexually compatible, what lines up, what doesn't line up, and how can I be creative. Now, I highly recommend sign up for some coaching with me. I can walk you through this evaluation process in a way that's not going to get you in trouble, because it might. But it's a good resource for knowing where are your kinks, where do they lie, what are they, and how does this work with my partner? What are their kinks? It could be anything. So you have to know where you're compatible and what those interests are before you can just encourage somebody to be your kind of freak, because they might be a different kind of freak, and that's okay.
And I also think that sometimes you got to talk about being able to, you know, not be embarrassed to try. Because sometimes, you know, I've heard, women tell me that, you know, I don't want my husband to think I know how to do that. Girl, why not? You know, it's sometimes it's like, why are, you know, it's us being able to communicate to your partner.
Yeah.
And sometimes, the freakiness is there. You just hiding it because you're trying to act like you ain't. And, you know, them closet door freaks, I guess that's, you know, kind of might be what they're looking for. So be honest with yourself, too. I think that's kind of, I'm going to throw that in there, too, even though I'm acting like I'm a sex expert of the world, but I'm just going to throw that in there. So can you tell us?
I love that. Love it.
Now, this kind of goes back to the question that we had before when we were talking about, you know, having a partner who they feel like they don't have sex with each other enough. And I usually think that that kind of goes back to connection, but you tell me, what do you do, or how can you encourage a partner to have sex with them more often?
Yeah. So I do think this doubles back to that question. And one of the things that I'll look at is, do you know what turns your partner on?
Mm.
Having that knowledge about your partner, and it might come through conversation, but it might also come through observation. And you just pointed out something really beautiful about not being basically ashamed to share the things that are present for you and what your needs are. So your partner may not want to say it in conversation, but if you begin to observe what interests them, what are they doing on a day-to-day basis, how often are they slowing down, and really begin to notice, then you'll be able to encourage them to have these deeper connections, have these deeper conversations. I would say you can't force someone to want to have sex with you, but you can drive their desire to want to have sex with you. And that is something that looks a completely different way. So definitely think it echoes back. Definitely, I would say being able to move through that shame and talk about what your needs are and what you want is going to be critically important, and asking those questions.
You know, I love what you said. Well, you can help their desire to want you. I love that, because that is definitely going to lead to some type of intimacy when you follow your desire. So, and that goes back to, like you said, probably understanding and remembering, or just acknowledging new things that your partner may need to turn them on or to get reconnected intimately. And I think that we've forgotten a piece sometimes that, you know, sometimes we need that romance too. We need that, you know, that special soft love, you know, just to make us feel special. But it doesn't always have to be on a holiday, right?
I
think that, you know, we can just do that at any time, just to let people remember, you know, the love felt and all those other good things. So I think that some of the just old school dating habits that you do, the courting issues and the old school stuff like that, still get, you know, still make women drop their panties. You know what I mean? So.
Yep. Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Okay. So I have women who are, you know, they will probably, I think that I didn't know that all of your stuff was online, so I think that that opens up a lot of doors for women who are not going to 100 feel comfortable like coming in or talking to someone like you or saying that they even need to go to a sex or an intimacy coach. How do you recommend that they reconnect with their bodies just on their own for those that are just that type of woman?
Yeah, this is a great question. So I think that it does depend on what type of reconnection that you're looking for. I mentioned masturbation earlier, and when I talk about that, I'm talking about so much more than I'm going to touch my genitals, because it's not about that. It's about that process of self-discovery in what is it that I want? What are my needs? How do I enjoy this type of environment, this type of touch, this type of being in my body? And there's a lot of shame and trauma that can keep us from actually being inside of ourselves, being embodied, because that may not have always been a safe place. It might not have always been an okay or healing place. So to be able to allow for yourself to just spend some time working through that, I think is important. I'm a big proponent of somatic work. I think that looking at how do we look at where our trauma is in our body? Is there something that we hear that will trigger us? Is there a place on our body that we're not interested in being touched or we have shame around, and healing that relationship with that part? You know, what is it? Maybe you feel fat. And that has been a big thing for your whole life. Well, how do you heal and love your belly? And how do you understand where those things came from? How do you do that deeper inner work? So I think that both of those are really, really great ways. Love somatics. My work is online. I do my coaching online. So again, you don't have to go anywhere. And I think that it allows for people to feel safer being in their own homes. So I think that's a really big one. But practice and ritual is another one that comes to mind. How often are you having rituals with yourself? Are you taking deep breaths, lighting candles, doing affirmations? How often are you having that positive self-talk? And even with the spaces that you don't feel positive about, that's the most important place to have that. So I hope that kind of taps into things for some people, just in terms of how you can do your own inner healing and you're deepening your connection with yourself.
I love that. Thanks. Queen, tell us, how can people stay in contact with you, and how can they get in, get some coaching from you? How do they contact you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I offer private and individual coaching as well as coaching for couples. You can find me on Instagram at Nika Sherrell, and I'll make sure that you have that information. Also at Trigger Happy Toy. And for getting in touch with me with my coaching, you can go to NikaSherrell.com. There's a Calendly link. You can sign up and get on my schedule. Again, we'll make sure you have all this, especially for the spelling of it. Please, please reach out. IISEglobal.org is where you can find all of the empowerment groups and that work. You can sign up for that 2-week trial. I'm open and available for any conversation anyone needs to have. And I'm really grateful to have been on this podcast. If people want to write it down, I will spell really quickly for the website. Mm-hmm. So, NikaSherrell.com. And that's where you can go to my website. You can see the breadth of my work, and you can click that Calendly link and get on my schedule.
All right, Queen, we got to get out of here. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you so much for being part of the show, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Bye-bye. So I guess that wraps it up for me today. Thanks for tuning in and listening. We can stay connected on my social media outlets, my Facebook page, If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes Life Coaching, my Instagram page, @CoachDeidre, and past podcasts can be heard on CoachDeidre.com. So So I'll be back with a new show Friday, June 28th at noon on the one and only Interlight Radio. I hope you'll tune in again. Until then, I hope you'll be doing more than paying bills and waiting to die. Go live. This is Deidre, your life coach, reminding you, if you want to make a change in your life, do it. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.